Well, good afternoon. It's a pleasure for me to join you. This is the first time I've ever started a session, and I've had to compete with the bar. So I hope it goes well all afternoon and we get there. And we'll see how we get going. But they asked me to review some things about the history, the vision, the mission of BIF. And really, it's quite an illustrious and provocative history that the BIF organization has had through the years. Joe is right that it started in about 1968, but it actually had many years prior to that of people building up to the ideas and the concepts that BIF was actually built on. What I'll go over with you today is kind of the five W's of BIF, I call them, and so I worked some slides up just to give me some talking props to get going. What happened before BIF? You know, where were we at in the industry? And if you think back in the 50s and early 60s, just about every state that had a major force or a major amount of beef cattle production in it had a beef improvement association, a state-run one. And so Georgia might be doing something, or Alabama, or Mississippi, Kansas, the Dakotas, Montana. Different states would have these different breed improvement committees or associations, and they'd be running central bull tests, or they'd be doing different things on their programs within their local and state and regional organizations, and they didn't always match up. And so really it was time for them as they came together that they knew then that it was time to get together and to start pulling some cooperative efforts. The other thing that was going on at that time prior to BIF was the PRI, or the Performance Registry. And that's, if you remember the old days, for the older ones in the room, that's where we had certified meat sires. And it was the first idea of having sires that would go out and they do progeny testing and harvest those progeny and look at carcass results and actually get certified meat sires. And so those were all evolving and all coming along with a set of producers that were out there in the country that were starting to gain momentum as far as what they saw the future of the beef industry needed, especially on the genetic end. And so once BIF was started as an action, and is still today, an organization of organizations, and that's why it's a federation. The start really can be pointed toward two gentlemen, Ferry Carpenter and Frank Baker. Frank Baker was on the Department of Animal Science at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and Ferry Carpenter was a lawyer out of Colorado and a Hereford breeder. And they had some common interest. They had common fellows that they started to pull together. And actually, in 1967, they had the first formal meeting that became BIF, and then BIF followed with the charter in 1968. This is a slide that's got just a few of the pioneers up there. I'll tell you, the pioneers, one of them that isn't up there is Jim Brink. And Jim Brink was a faculty member at Colorado State University, extremely talented and intelligent man that worked in the areas of animal management, genetic prediction, genetic evaluation and improvement. And to tell you what, I've looked for 3 days on the internet and cannot find a picture of Jim Brink to put up there with his fellow compadres that are up there. But that list of people that are up there are just some of the ones that really had big influences on the very beginning of it. Dr. Wilhelm is up there from Iowa State. He started a deal that was called the Cow Game, and it was the first time that that computers were used to simulate cow-calf production. And also, he worked a lot on EPDs and their calculations and those kind of things. Some of the early officers, Dave Nichols up there, he still comes to BIF, and I think he is the only person alive that has attended every BIF meeting that has taken place throughout the years. Henry Gardner up there has now passed away, but Henry gave one of the most famous series of speeches for the BIF cause, and that speech was to BIF to EPD or not EPD. That is the question. And he was one of the ones that got up in front of the industry and started to really push the fact that it's time to get facts on the cattle and use those facts in beef production. Ike Eller from Virginia Tech, Bob Dickinson with Simmental's, and Mr. Bennett from Virginia all were pioneers. And if you go back and look at the website, you can go back and see many of these pioneers and where they're at. Now we have a new generation of BIFers, and it's really a mix of producers, of academia, and of industry coming together. And it's a really interesting mix of people as we look at the intelligence and the thought processes and the ideas that are generated and then thought through BIF as we go. And so there's all kinds of people up there in that. And so that kind of covers the who, but the what part is the purpose. And when we started, when they started BIF, they came in with five purposes for BIF, and those five purposes have remained the mission and vision of BIF through almost 50 years. And those are the uniformity. The first one is uniformity, and if you remember what I said earlier, that those state associations, a lot of them would adjust to different ages or they would measure things not quite the same. And so one of the first things that the BIF forefathers did was try to standardize the way we measure things. And we continue to do that today. I mean, one of the things you're going to hear about in the committee meetings either tomorrow afternoon or the afternoon after that is some ideas on how we will uniform, will have uniform measurements for feed intake and gain. And some of those things that you think, well, shoot, we've been weighing cattle and measuring gain for many, many years. Why are we revisiting that or why are we doing that? Is because one of the jobs that BIF has is to make sure that we're doing it right and we're doing it the same so that when we compare the data, we get good answers for you as cattle producers to utilize in your herds. The other one of the other purposes is development. It was the idea of bringing technology into the cattle business and development of mathematical formulas, scoring systems, phenotypic measurements, and other things that you would use to genetically benefit your herd. Cooperation to bring the people together to do that. Education, because just as we started with EPDs back in the 70s, we still need to educate the not only the public but the producers on what we do, and then the confidence that you, and to build confidence not only in genetics and the ability of what genetics can do for the beef herd, but for beef demand itself. We know that we have to have confidence, not only from a domestic but a world market, that we do produce the best beef in the United States, and we do it with facts and figures and science as we do that. I'll go back and just go over the logo. The logo was actually brought back and was actually put on the BIF in the early 70s. It's got three triangles, and each one of those triangles, one triangle is for industry, one triangle is for research, and the third triangle is for extension. And those were the three branches or the three groups of people that they brought together then to form BIF. So now we'll kind of go through the wins, and I just kind of broke it down in decades. In the 1970s, that was a time when it was really just getting the organization off the ground. It was time to get their charter, get their constitution and bylaws, get their policies together, start printing the guidelines, start doing different things where you actually get organized and get standardized on what you're going to do. Does anybody in the room know why we have 205-day weaning weights? Why are we standardized at 205 days? Does anybody know? It's because the first weaning, or one of the weaning weight papers that was published in the Journal of Animal Science was from the Bell Ranch, and the average age of the weaned calves was 205 days. That's why it is. And so we had papers out there or people comparing weights at anywhere from 160 to 240 days. And it was decided, that was one of the things decided in the early years, that we would adjust weights to 205 days. And so that would be one of the things that they did back in the 70s. The other thing that they did is they started the first guidelines. And those guidelines are now in its ninth edition. And those guidelines have been a very, very important part of the education and the reference of what the policies and standardizations are for the for Beef Improvement Federation. Central bull tests were big back in the 70s. If you remember that era, it was the time to get cattle together to to check their performance, to find their performance, and to use that performance for selection. And so it was time to standardize that as well. And then we began the calculations of how we're going to do these different things and do it in a standardized way and keep that going. Then in the 80s, the EPDs came out, and there was a lot of education and adaptation that had to go along with that once we started the EPDs. If you look back in the early papers, though, all along in BIF, they have worried about or been concerned with reproductive efficiency. And all through those years, they have looked at management and genetics that have looked at ways to improve the reproduction of the U.S. cow herd, or the cow herd that's out there. The other technology that came along in the 80s was ultrasound, and we had several people that were extremely involved in the development of ultrasound and the use of ultrasound to help relieve the need for true carcass data. You know, how many of you have been in a packing plant to retrieve carcass data? It is a tremendous amount of work, and ultrasound has saved the industry many, many hours of work and give it highly reliable data to base carcass information on. And so those forefathers have really done excellent work of us bringing along a technology that has become commonplace for our producers to use every day. The last thing I have up there is systems. And really, I think in the 80s is where the concept of breeding systems and management systems and using systems work to produce beef cattle really came into play or started to come into play as we do that. And I'll just tell you, as a grad student in the 80s, it was a lot of work to do some of the things that were on that last slide. My master's project was to look and verify what does milk EPDs really mean. And after milking 900 range cows, I'll tell you, it takes a lot of work to get the data that was used to verify those early EPD years. And if you look back through the literature, whether it's a BIF symposium, a state research report, or a national publication, a lot of the 80s was spent just making sure people could have confidence in those numbers that we were producing as breed organizations as we brought along there. But the systems work started to show up, and we started to see charts like this up here where we looked at different environments, varying environments, and different levels of productions that would keep cow herds matched up to their environment and keep their reproduction rates high and the value of their offspring as well. And so we went through the 80s and kind of found those different kind of charts going, and we finally got to the 90s. And the 90s was where we really started turning those traits that we would measure into economically relevant traits. And we'd really start to put the biological part along with the economic part and look at to see how those fit together and see how we could stay in business as an industry and move forward. It is also the era where we really started, BIF started to promote or started to explain the ability to use composite breeds of cattle or composite bulls. I think if you attended the BIF meeting in 1995, you probably remember that vividly in your mind because there was heated debate about straight bred and composite bulls at that BIF meeting. And both sides got to air their views well into the night, if it wasn't during the meeting, but at the bar afterwards, to give their views on that. It was also the refinement of technology. You know, we had ultrasound. We had computers that were running faster and faster as we went. And so as we looked at that, we started to refine things and make things much more efficient and as far as data collection and data management. We got more into systems management. And really, the end product became one of the major drivers of our industry during the 90s. If you really stop and think about it, when I was BIF executive director from 2000 to 2008, right in those years, the most requested paper that I ever had as an executive director was the one by Milton in 1995 that appeared in the BIF proceedings, and it was called Conception to Consumption, the Economics of Genetic Improvement. And in that paper, Milton came up with the standard formula that reproduction is worth twice that of the value of growth and twice that the value of the carcass endpoint. And so as we look at those things, we can see how it has evolved. And in the year 2000, we finally spent a single general session on DNA. and the technologies that DNA will bring. So 15 years ago, right now, we brought that to the forefront, and DNA really started to take off about 15 years ago. And there was a lot of promises. We had STARS, we had EPDs, we had all kinds of different systems that were being proposed about what to do. And we also started to look more and more at what I call novel traits and some people call convenient traits. But we really started to collect data that was tough before to get, like udder scoring and those kind of things. Feed intake, you know, we're after feed intake. We're after carcass data even more than what we've ever been before. So where are we? We've been across the United States and to our neighbors up north into Canada where we have our annual meetings. Next year we get to go to Manhattan, Kansas. So I hope you all enjoy a nice conference and convention here and then are impressed enough to come and visit us in Manhattan. And we'll probably go global as we do. And why did we do it? You know, I think that's one of the questions you really need to answer yourself is why did BIF come together? And it was because those people were interested in making money. It was an economic driver, and it was the right thing to do and the right way to raise cattle. And they wanted to build a culture. If we look at society and the way we try to build friends and build cultures, BIF was built on a culture of people that were pioneers in their field and firmly believed in the belief that beef cattle should be raised with facts and figures and not fancy and fads as we go through there. So just to leave you a couple of quotes, Bob Weber, I think, said it very elegantly once about what BIF meetings are about and what you can get out of BIF meetings. So did Larry Cora. Larry that's not a bad quote for somebody that sells meat for a living or used to sell meat for a living. But Larry has always been instrumental in the people that were brought forward. And so just to orientate you a little bit about the meetings that we've got coming up, our meeting format has not changed in decades. Our meeting format is in the mornings we have large general sessions with in-depth discussion about certain topics. And those in-depth discussions will either happen individually or with group panels. And in the afternoon, we will have committees that will break apart, and you can find those different committees and those topics that will be used to form ideas for the next year or coming year's events as we do that. So that's kind of the breakdown. The other thing that's always common about BIF is we have great meals. We have great meals. Beef is always the center of the plate, and we like that. And the other thing that we do over the years is we recognize the people that has used their life and their talents to reward the beef industry. So that's just a little wrap-up about beef history and those kind of things. This fancy thing I'm supposed to do about the questions, Brandy, I didn't think I'd get any on the history. But welcome to Biloxi. Welcome. Thank you, Mississippi State, for hosting us. And I'm sure we'll have a great convention. Thank you.